I think the more people can empower themselves so that we don't feel completely hopeless, then there's like a synergy, right? It's okay, well, now I've done a little bit, so now I don't feel hopeless. So now I feel like I can do more. Mm. And now I can feel like I can work with other people instead of hiding because I feel like I'm a terrible person for, you know, for my consumptive lifestyle. Yeah, I think there's some synergy involved as more people take up your suggestions and more people take up your coaching. All right, let's go. Welcome everybody to season 3 of the Here Together podcast. We're your hosts, Charles Matthews
and Kelly Roberge.
We are obsessed with the big question. Can we live together sustainably? And if so, how? So over the next year, we're going to curate conversations with the people who are living in eco-villages, designing new cities, inventing new or unearthing old technology, and who are at the forefront of sustainability sciences, because we want to get answers for ourselves and for you. And that's why we're really excited to interview Sarah Zellner early in this season. Sarah has been helping organizations and families answer that big question. She is an entrepreneur on a mission to help individuals and businesses align their priorities with their values to create positive change.
And you know we're suckers for values alignment.
Absolutely, absolutely. Sarah is the founder and owner of SAS Healthy Living, which provides sustainable living, health, and wellness coaching, and is the principal CEO of Lens Consulting LLC, which specializes in corporate responsibility, including environmental, social, and governance, and sustainability consulting. Sarah uses her research and coaching skills to delve into her clients' vexing issues and assist them in reaching their goals. Do we have vexing issues?
Oh my God, so many. I love that you say vexing. That made me really happy when I was reading your stuff. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You bet. Thanks so much for being here.
You know, we're particularly excited to have Sarah with us in this second episode of the third season because she's already been helping people with the big question.
So, yay.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. But we want to ask you a not so big question first off, which is just kind of our way to get to know you a little bit, which is, you know, did you have to share a bedroom when you were growing up?
I did. I did have to share a bedroom growing up. So my sister is 2 years younger than me, and she was my bedroom buddy. So we got along. No, actually, we didn't get along too well when we were younger. But as a testament to the way that relationship changed over the years, she's now probably my best friend.
Yeah.
So, oh, yay. Yeah,
it's great.
Do you think you learned anything about living with people or sharing space or sharing stuff because you were, you know, stuck sharing a bedroom?
Yeah, I think it certainly does make you realize that you need to find your happy medium. I mean, with somebody else in your space. So I think it's a little more difficult, obviously, when you're a kid. I don't think you're as aware, but certainly you have to make those types of, I guess, you have to acquiesce to somebody else. You have to, you know, negotiate and be able to understand each other so that you can live in semi-harmony when you're a kid and, you know, perfect harmony as an adult. So it's, I think sharing space and particularly a bedroom space certainly helps with that.
Yeah, those are sort of sustainability skills. You talked about negotiating and listening and all of that. And I'm also thinking about, I was just listening to an interview with Kim Stanley Robinson today, who's one of my favorite science fiction authors. And he writes a lot of what they're calling cli-fi, you know, kind of climate fiction. And he was talking about the concept of having enough and rather than an abundance. And yeah, as a way to move forward. And speaking of that, you know, speaking of enough and words and definitions, do you have a definition of sustainability that you like to use or think about?
Yeah, I would say in terms of how I define sustainability, I would define it as humans and nature existing in harmony to essentially support present and future generations. So it really is that idea of this cohesion of living together. I mean, certainly we just talked about, you know, living with my sister in the bedroom for the early years of my life, but now we're talking about, you know, humans and nature living together and being able to coexist and coexist successfully so that one doesn't dominate the other, so to speak.
Right, right.
So Sarah, what drew you to doing this work?
Yeah, so I have been a business consultant, a consultant in corporate responsibility, environmental, social, and governance, ESG, as you mentioned earlier, and sustainability now for probably over 15, 20 years. So I own my own firm, Lynn's Consulting LLC, doing just that. And so, sustainability and health and wellness included have always been, really huge passions of mine personally. And during COVID, I was feeling like I just needed to do more, particularly in terms of just being able to help people. I think we've certainly seen recently with the current, environmental changes that are going on, all the floods, the droughts that you're experiencing out west, just how important it is to really combat climate change. And certainly being able to do that at the corporate level has been fantastic for me. But I was feeling that at the individual level, individuals too need that type of guidance. There's so much information out there. It's hard to kind of go through it all and be able to understand it cohesively. So I decided to establish SES Healthy Living for that purpose. So basically to coach people on how to live sustainable lives, environmentally sustainable lives, as well as live healthier lives. I think the two are intertwined quite a bit. So our personal health is dependent on environmental health. And so my coaching essentially combines the two.
So have you seen the demand for the sustainability piece go up with regular people like couples and families and that sort of just regular everyday people? Is the demand going up for that?
Yeah, I would say so. I think there are a lot more people interested in using this information to live healthier lives. I think certainly it's come to the forefront of our news, and just some of our social issues too are related to this. And so as a result, there's definitely been an uptick.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we talked about in episode one, just, I don't know if I want to call it psychic or hormonal or whatever, the weight that I felt lift off of me when I started contemplating, what it would be like to live in a much more sustainable community, to be able to, see where my food is being grown, to have the energy that I'm using be completely carbon neutral, and to be living, as you described, in some sort of harmony with the natural world. Instead of watching, as we're seeing here in our neighborhood, instead of watching habitat loss just happening at this incredible rate. And I just felt like I could breathe better just thinking about it. Mm-hmm. So I can very much feel in my body that connection between sustainability and personal health. But I'm curious, where the connections are for you, and how what are you seeing with your clients? Are they willing to work on both sustainability and personal health? Do they see those connections? And how do you combine those in your coaching? That was a lot of questions all at once, but that's what we do.
That was our patented question cluster.
Yeah,
that's right. Okay, I can take this on. So I think, obviously, the clients that come to me, I don't think they necessarily see them as a combined effort. I think oftentimes it's mutually exclusive. It's one or the other. But I think in my marketing, in my website, they know that I have this emphasis that certainly if we talk about health and health coaching, I'm going to have a bent that guides them towards more sustainable options. Does that mean they can take those options? It's all, their choice. Certainly anyone who's experienced coaching understands that coaching is all about the person who's interested being able to come and be motivated enough to want to embrace those changes. And so I think with my clients, they certainly come to me wanting to make those changes and knowing that I'll provide that sustainable bent to them. And for those that are particularly interested in sustainable living, but not the health, personal health, I think, inevitably becomes a discussion when you're talking about sustainable living. So you really can't separate them out too much.
Yeah. Can you say more about that? How are they linked? I can imagine a bunch of different ways, but I'm curious what your take.
So in terms of how sustainability and health are linked, in terms of my coaching, what I bring is basically with my sustainable living, it's all about, we talk about household habits like water usage and, you know, cleaning products, which are related to health, right? I mean, when we're talking about cleaning products in particular, we're talking about toxins that affect not only personal health, but the health of the environment. I mean, the health of animals and the environment. And so, so that can become a discussion. We talk about food waste and landscaping. We talk about their personal lifestyle then. So buying habits and clothing, commuting, hobbies, leisure travel. We talk about climate change and socially responsible investing. Now, we don't have to talk about all of those things, but all of those things are on the table to talk about. And certainly that's not an exclusive list. And from the health perspective then, so looking at it from that direction, I focus on diet and nutrition. So in that sense, from the sustainability standpoint, we talk about eating organic and reducing the toxins in your food and eating less beef and lamb, which are contributors to methane, which contribute to greenhouse gases at the end of the day. And then there is also an emphasis on reducing your toxins. So the personal products that you use, like cosmetics, your creams, your soaps. So do you use all natural products, or do you use products that may have endocrine disruptors, which not only disrupt human health, but also disrupt the health of animals?
Sorry. So those endocrine disruptors get into the water and affect fish and frogs and
That's exactly what we're talking
about.
Not good.
Yeah. And reducing the amount of red meat consumed is a great twofer, right? It's like helps with heart health and reduces methane in the environment. So.
Correct. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And reduces animal suffering.
Absolutely. Yeah. We've been doing pretty good with that. We've spent the last couple of years now planning our menu out a month. Now it's like months in advance, kind of with some variety. And the menu planning has helped us eat more mindfully and more carefully. Mm-hmm. And the shopping is more careful. We've been shopping at the farmer's market more often. Pretty much the only beef we eat is locally raised and grass fed. But it takes some effort to do that planning. It takes some thought and some attention for sure.
And it was a very conscious decision because Charles was like, I just don't want to contribute to that anymore. So let's just get our meat at the farmer's market. I mean, we'll maybe eat meat if we go out to a restaurant or something. But for what we buy to bring home to cook, we do a lot of vegetarian meals. And, you know, there's really good Impossible Burgers are amazing. And so, yeah, we're just buy some really a little bit of really good meat and eat less of it and try to enjoy it more.
Yeah. Right. Enjoy it more.
Yeah. And I would say too, I think along those lines, I mean, you guys demonstrate, you know, a couple that's inspired, that's certainly motivated to take those steps to be more sustainable. Whereas my purpose and the coaching that I provide is to basically help people. You know, again, some people just don't know where to start. And so, I mean, the service I provide is being able to ask those questions to say, well, what's important to you in terms of sustainability, in terms of healthy living? Like, where can we start and where are you motivated to make progress? So where you're really going to dig in and say, yeah, I really want to eat vegetarian and I really want to, you know, reduce the amount of beef and lamb that I eat to be more sustainable. So, but how do I get there? How do I make that change? So, and we basically develop a plan to help my client get there. So that's the whole purpose for the coaching.
That's great.
Right. I could imagine it partially from my own experience and partially just, you know, extrapolating from what I see in other people, that climate change is such a big, scary issue. And the idea of sustainability is so counter to the, you know, the corporate consumerism of our culture that, you know, I can really imagine a lot of people don't know where to start, or we don't know what actually makes a difference. Like, we'd be willing to do something to, you know, be better, quote unquote. But, you know, it's like, it's hard to know what actually makes a difference. What kind of arc do you see in your clients of, you know, where they start and kind of where they wind up after you've worked with them for a while?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, most of the clients that come to me are already pretty motivated. I think to seek out a coach, you know, say, be it a career coach or a life coach, you already have to know that there is an issue that you want to confront. And so I think in terms of sustainable living or health coaching, it's very much the same. So when my clients come to me, we talk about the realm of possibilities. I mean, certainly with the sustainable living coaching, it's a matter of narrowing down where your values lie, like what's most important to you in terms of sustainable living and where you think, number one, you can make those changes because change is hard. I mean, to change a habit, it takes at least 2 months on average, research shows. So you're going to have to be pretty committed to making that change, to want it to happen. So we establish, I mean, where those interests lie, and then we plot out a plan to make those changes a reality. So in terms of the arc, I mean, I would say my clients, you know, it varies, right? Some of them are there. They're super motivated. They're ready to make the changes that they want. And some, you know, I mean, it's more of a meandering path versus an arc, so to speak. But everybody's different. And I think at the end of the day, I mean, I'm here to help how I can. So in whatever way I can.
Right, right. Well, do you feel like you can put on your coach hat for 7 or 10 minutes and kind of give us a demonstration, actually just give us some coaching about, pretend we're brand new clients and we're motivated and, you know, maybe we'll pretend to be a little bit less knowledgeable than we are. Yeah.
All right. Absolutely. Let's do it.
Take it away.
All right. So Charles and Kelly, thanks for coming in today. It's great to have you here. So tell me a little bit about what brings you in today.
I think Kelly described it the other day as feeling like our life is unsatisfying in some ways. In particular, we live in what has become suburban sprawl. When I first moved in, there was a bunch of open space, you know, off to one side of the house and you could see for miles, and now it's all closed in with houses and it's not contributed. The new growth hasn't contributed to quality of life. We don't know the neighbors, you know, we're not interacting with folks. And of course, COVID made that worse.
More pronounced. Absolutely.
So I think there's sort of social sustainability is lacking for us. And it's really the whole understanding of the urgency of global climate change. And even though we don't have kids, the rapidity, the changes are happening in the environment and in the weather. Fires have gotten much closer to our mountain town in the last couple of years, and areas that we didn't think were going to burn are burning. So there's some anxiety, definitely feel some anxiety around it, and want to be part of the solution and not a continued part of the problem, I guess is.
Yeah. Yeah. So we already do a lot of household things. We recycle, we do this and that and the other thing. We reduce.
But we're hearing that recycling's not really.
Right. Yeah.
We were like, effective.
Is the stuff that we're putting in our recycle bin actually getting recycled, or is it getting shipped to some other country? And yeah, so we're willing to put in the work and the effort, but we're not really sure what we should be doing.
All right. So from what I'm hearing then, so it sounds like you're living in an area where your neighbors might not share the same values as you do in terms of your environmental perspective. And both of you are concerned about the environment. And you're doing some things that you feel may be productive towards being more sustainable. However, you're unsure about whether those things might be working and whether there are things you might do that would be more productive and more impactful. Now, is that correct? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And like, you know, little things like, Kelly got a subscription to a household cleaning product, you know, company, but that say they're sustainable, but I don't know whether it's any different than pouring Roundup down the drain. You know, it's not clear to me whether those products are really better for us. And, you know, and then from a household perspective, like burrowing down a little bit, I got diagnosed with moderate asthma. So that's basically an environmental disease caused by all this pollen and smoke in the air and probably not great things in the house. And so my personal health and my ability to be part of the solution is curtailed when I'm having an asthma attack. You know, I can't do anything. I gotta, you know, I lie on the couch and work on breathing. So there's some sort of kind of systems change that's needed so that I can be healthy, so that we can do more.
Right. Right. So I guess focusing then on your health issues and your asthma in particular, and the contribution that the wildfires may be making to it, and going back to referring to, the difference in attitudes that you might have in your neighborhood. I mean, do you feel that your current living environment suits your needs, or is that something you would consider changing if push came to shove?
We're thinking about it. We're thinking about whether or not this is the right place to live.
Okay. And do you want to talk a little bit about that, or do you want to focus our conversation more on some of, I guess, the activities that you all could focus on in terms of being more impactful?
I think it makes more sense to focus on daily activity type stuff right now, because I want to think in terms of our listeners and what they could put into practice today. Versus, you know, it's not realistic for a lot of people to just to pick up and move somewhere else where there isn't as big a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. But sometimes big issues require big solutions.
And, absolutely.
And we are looking at that kind of big solution, but don't tell Kelly's boss.
The shot.
All right. Right. Well, let's talk then about some of the more daily solutions that you can take to be more sustainable. So let me ask you, first off, what type of energy source do you use? So do you use renewable energy? Do you happen to know from your electric company?
We did actually sign up with, what is it called? Acadia?
Mm-hmm.
So supposedly Acadian Power, we pay them and they purchase energy on the wind grid, on the renewable grid, and then they pay APS, which is our local energy provider. Locally, if you don't do that in our town, you're just buying coal electricity.
Okay.
And then we have gas heat.
And then we have natural gas heat. Yeah.
Okay. Great. Yeah. Because I would say to you and your listeners, I mean, reducing your reliance on fossil fuels is probably the most important thing you can do to lower your carbon footprint. So simply by changing to renewable energy, so using wind energy or solar, other sustainable means, I mean, that makes just such an incredible impact. So that's a great first step. So let me ask you next then. So although we already referred to it previously.
Actually, Sarah, before you move on, can you help our listeners? I mean, what are ways to have control over where your electricity comes from?
Mm-hmm. Great question. And I do have a list of resources in my blogs on my website where you can find all the information that we will probably cover and more today. So
that's great. That's great.
Definitely. Yeah. I want to point you in that direction for more details. So, cause I do talk about this in a couple of my blogs.
Great. And we'll link to that too. So
yeah.
It'll be easy for people to find.
Yeah. So change where we get our electricity. What else?
Yep. So I would say next, and again, we did talk about this already, but minimizing the amount of beef and lamb that you eat. So in particular, cows and sheep are the highest livestock emitters of methane, which contribute to greenhouse gases. And so by reducing your dependence and your consumption of beef and lamb, it will greatly reduce the contribution, your carbon footprint. And as you both might know too, I mean, related to cows and sheep is grazing. And so we talk about biodiversity loss, particularly in the Amazon, where farmers are chopping down the forest, the rainforest, to make way for grazing areas for livestock. And not only does that compromise biodiversity, but trees convert carbon dioxide to oxygen through photosynthesis, which helps us absorb all the carbon dioxide that we're emitting through the burning of fossil fuels. And yeah, and by chopping down the rainforest and other trees for the purposes of livestock grazing, I mean, it just, yeah, it doesn't help the cause to reduce greenhouse gas emissions at all.
That's one of the worst things to do. Mm-hmm. Like, just stop chopping down trees for cows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the demand is there. I think that's the real challenge. Like, worldwide, the consumption of beef in particular is skyrocketing. So in countries like China that didn't necessarily have the income to consume beef previously, but now they do. I mean, they're becoming a really productive economic powerhouse. And so they can afford to buy beef and eat beef now. So, and when the demand is there, I mean, then unfortunately farmers will make certain the demand is met. So.
Gotcha. Yeah. So yeah, no more beef, no more commercial beef.
Nope.
Yeah. Great. No,
so you guys are you doing great on that front. Let me ask you next about your driving habits. So can you tell me a little bit about the type of car you drive and when you drive, how you drive?
Yeah, we have a couple of old cars. One is a big 8-cylinder minivan, which doesn't get driven too much. Like 10 miles a week if it's you.
Yeah, he works from home, so he doesn't drive a whole lot. And I work only a couple of miles away. So I drive the other car, the Subaru, is like leaking gaskets all over the place. And it's, you know, it's not a fuel efficient car anymore.
We could definitely improve our
vehicular situation. Yeah. It just hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it sounds, though, I mean, like, because, I mean, Charles, you work from home and Kelly, you only work a couple miles away, that really your use of the car is pretty minimal. I mean, other than maybe weekend trips or errands that you might run. Is that pretty accurate?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think you're definitely on a good path there. I mean, for those of your listeners who have to drive long distances, I would definitely recommend getting a hybrid or electric vehicle or focusing on a highly fuel efficient car, even if it does burn gas, because I mean, that is one of the other large contributors to greenhouse gas emissions. So certainly is that from commercial vehicles. So in general.
So it might not be the highest priority for us, given how little we drive, but for a lot of other people, it might be a higher priority.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yes, certainly for many Americans. I mean, we are a pretty car dependent country, and that's another great way to lower your carbon footprint. I have other suggestions too, like grouping errands together that may not be top of mind, but I mean, certainly the less your, you know, individual errands that you're running, the less, I mean, you're out and about and restarting your car all the time. So I think that's another suggestion that I would have.
Yeah, we hate leaving the house, so we definitely try to double up all of our errands.
Yeah, we're going to go to the farmer's market, the bookstore, the thrift store, and the other thing, and then we come home and we're done. But I've got a question that I hope you can answer. So I'm doing some work with international business leaders, and at some point in the next year, I'm probably going to be called upon to do some flying. And I'm wondering whether, I want my business to be carbon neutral. Does purchasing carbon offsets for airline flights, do you know, does it make a difference?
It certainly can't hurt. I think certainly the offsets will, I mean, do what they're said to do is to, by purchasing offsets, you're basically offsetting the cost in terms of your the greenhouse gas emissions that you're emitting through your flight. So yeah, I haven't really looked too much into offsets in terms of flights, but I do know that they're out there for reasons. So I would say definitely do your research, and I could certainly get back to you on that. But I have read articles previously that said that there's some magic number, I believe, which is 500 miles. So basically, if your trip is under 500 miles, it's more effective from an environmental standpoint to drive it than it is to fly it. But if it's over 500, then just hop on the plane, buy the carbon offsets, and be done with it.
That's a really helpful rule of thumb. Thank you for that. That's great.
Yeah, nice and clear. We appreciate clarity wherever we can get it.
Yeah.
Is there any difference from one airline to another? Or, I mean, are they pretty much all the same?
Airline fuel. Yeah.
I just didn't know if there are practices that make...
Our plane's powered by rubber bands. Buy a ticket now. No, thank you.
No.
You know what? I mean, the airline industry is certainly making headway. And I think too, I think they're very concerned just about the fuel efficiency in general. I mean, yeah. It makes them more profitable when they can fly faster and don't have to spend as much on jet fuels or what have you. So I would definitely, again, do the research to see if one airline is better than the other. I would presume those that have some of the more modern flights that are out there, or the modern planes, are probably more fuel efficient than those with older fleets. But I could be wrong on that. So definitely do your research.
Great, great. Well, thanks so much. Some great basic tips around checking your household energy sources. Be thinking about how you're driving and be thinking about how you're eating. All of which. Is good for the body too.
Right, right. Yeah. And it's kind of provides a helpful framework that then you can use for other things that we didn't even talk about. So research it, ask the right questions of the right people,
And Kelly and I both have learner high in our Gallup Strengths Finder. I'm like number one learner and you're number five.
Yeah.
Remember. So if you're not one of those number one or number five learners, then probably need to talk to somebody like Sarah or another coach who can help you suss that kind of stuff out. Yeah.
But I will tell you, I give my clients homework. So I think part of the change that people typically want to make is becoming invested in the change, right? And so, I can certainly do the research. I'm pretty knowledgeable in this and I can certainly guide people along, but I really want my clients to explore, to get on the internet and say, well, okay, which airline does have the most, fuel efficient fleet? How do you have those discussions? And so, because I can certainly, as mentioned, provide that information. But when my client goes out and says, you know what, Sarah, I found that, it is Delta. Like they're doing some great work in sustainability and their carbon offsets are amazing. And I never would have known this. Or and typically your clients don't pay attention. Like I can tell you these things, but
right.
If you go out and learn it for yourself, you're like, this is amazing. Wow. Like, yeah, now I need to, put this into practice. So it's really interesting, the difference in attitudes and adoption of these changes. When, someone provides you the information versus you actually seeking out the information yourself.
Sneaky coach secret.
Right. And then do you help people evaluate the information they find? Because as we know, the internet has, a variable quality of information.
Yes, absolutely. Sometimes I do provide sources to direct people to that I feel are accurate and provide sound information versus, coming with off of some random website. That's not to say that you can't evaluate that information, but I think you just need to, it's nice to be able to have those discussions with my clients to talk about it critically and say, okay, well, I mean, this could work, but maybe there's this other option from, the EPA, so the Environmental Protection Agency, that might make more sense than, this random,
TikTok website. Video.
Exactly. TikTok video. That's a good one.
Curious, in your experience, what have been or remain the blocks to families or organizations in adopting, a more sustainable lifestyle? Yeah. Let's focus on families and individuals. What prevents people from being able to make those changes?
Or trips them up once they're on the track.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think in terms of getting started, one of the biggest challenges is simply the convenience of the world we live in. It's very easy just to jump in your car and go to the store and come back and then remember, oh, that's right, I needed to head out to the grocery store now. So then you jump in your car again, you head off to the grocery store. And you do it because you can. I mean, because it's easy, because you don't have to think about the cost. I mean, financially oftentimes, and especially environmentally, I mean, that's typically not top of mind. So I think, especially in our culture, in American culture, convenience just trumps everything else, so to speak. And so to be able to backpedal from that and say, okay, well, yeah, things are really convenient, but are they good for you? And are they good for the environment? I mean, you have to, step back and see the bigger picture and say, well, yeah, maybe not. Maybe I should have, grouped those errands together versus just, doing one and then the other. And maybe that's a change I need to think about in the future. So convenience, I think, is definitely like an overarching challenge. And I think when people are in process, hindrances to change, I think, can come in different forms. You get distracted by other things in your life, obviously, if, work overtakes it, or if you start having health issues, or, you just priorities shift. And so when it comes to sustainability, you've got to integrate it and make it a priority. It doesn't have to be the priority, but it needs to be top of mind and pretty important for people to actually make it a habit. So, I mean, you're automatically recycling, it's not even a second thought. It automatically goes in the recycling bin if it's a number one. Or I don't know, or if you can recycle plastic bags, you automatically put them in a big bin and take them to your grocery store to recycle your plastic bags there. And I think the third challenge probably is that our society and our government doesn't always make it easy to be more sustainable. So I think, for example, like when you talked about recycling, Kelly, I mean, there are such differences in recycling from, municipality to municipality. I mean, can you recycle a number five here? The little plastic symbol on the bottom of the container. Sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. And that's really it makes it very difficult, I think, not just from community to community, but also from state to state. And as a nation, I think if a lot of this were standardized, it would make it much easier to adopt.
Yeah. Yeah, I was making a face when you were talking about convenience because I was just reflecting on my behavior today. I left my mom's right at lunchtime. I did not make a plan ahead of time for what I was going to do to eat in my hour-long drive home. And I went to the Maverick gas station and bought some junk food, even though there are wonderful restaurants that would have, provided locally grown takeout, locally produced food if I had been willing to wait an extra 10 minutes. So, yep, convenience trumped, and that was not good for the environment and not good for my health either. So, two strikes, Matthews.
Two thumbs down.
I will do better. And I know that I have to make a plan. I didn't have a plan and one, then I'm in a hurry and I'm hungry and, you know, convenience ruled. So yeah. Yeah. Thanks for that. Thanks for reminding me about that. I really appreciate that. And thanks for talking about, you know, the systemic blocks that we have in our country for making change. And we got to speak up about that. We got to speak up locally and, you know, change our waste management policies locally and speak up nationally. Some great stuff going on, but the government is kind of behind business. Business is leading the way in creating more sustainable solutions, and government's kind of lagging behind. We got to get them to catch up.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, from the business standpoint, absolutely. I think corporate responsibility and sustainability has definitely been at the forefront, and it's come to the forefront. It's taken some time over the years, but I think in some ways, corporations have certainly surpassed government in their ability to make change. Now, certainly you have to look up for greenwashing, I think, in that regard, but it's still pretty impressive, the efforts that are being made by the private sector.
Would you be willing to define greenwashing real quick, just for anybody who doesn't, any of our listeners who aren't sure what that means?
Yeah. So greenwashing is essentially a company putting forth sustainable, you know, claims that they say that they're doing, but can't really support with data or with the actions that they're performing. So for example, if you had, say, a retail company that said they had a take back program, that they said they were providing those clothes to people in need, and you found out that instead these clothes were being shipped to Africa and they were ending up in a dump in the middle of the city, for example. I mean, that's not sustainability. So, I mean, when it comes to corporate sustainability, I mean, basically companies need to back up their claims with data and with actions and with just be able to demonstrate the changes that they're making for the environment.
Yeah, I remember 10 years ago when I was more involved in the outdoor world, we were working for a nonprofit and we were trying to get Patagonia to donate some of their used and returned fleeces to our program that was serving underserved kids. And they said, nah, they're all going to Tibet. And they had pictures to prove it. All of these Tibetan kids and like Tibetan little monks wearing Patagonia fleece. I'm like, ah, that kid's better dressed than I am right now.
Well, I was going to add also, as a marketer and a graphic designer, I also want people to look out for just the suggestion of sustainability that may not actually reflect true sustainability. You know, if you buy the green package, that might not mean much more than green ink. So I just, you know, these companies spend a ton of money on marketing and they want to compete. And not everybody, you know, is actually walking the walk, but they will make their stuff look like.
Yeah, it's got a green package, but it has 0% post-consumer waste on it. Yeah. Post-consumer content.
So let's time travel right now to 2050. The world has been embracing these principles of sustainability, a sustainable community and resource management and all this good stuff that you have been helping people with for 30 years. What's the world look like?
Okay. So we're assuming everything is fantastic.
That people got on board and are taking your advice, living their best life, Sarah style.
It's like 10,000 Sarah Zellner trained sustainability consultants.
You got cloned
around the world. Yeah.
In 2021. And there's a bunch of Sarahs out there showing us all how to do it. What's the world look like?
Yeah. I mean, hopefully better than it looks today, I think. I mean, truly, from an environmental standpoint, I mean, to back up a little bit, let me talk about current day before we talk about the future and what's happening right now. In August, I may have mentioned the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change released a report, an update on the state of climate change in the world. It was a massive report. It was authored by some 230 authors from like 60 countries and had 14,000 such scientific papers cited. It was massive. And so the report says that climate change and warming is of the planet is accelerating. So we've already reached 1.1 degrees Celsius of warming since the pre-industrial period, which is essentially the mid-19th century from which they've been measuring climate change. So, and the scientists are basically saying that we need to limit global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius in the next two decades. Otherwise, the changes to our planet are irreversible. So, we don't have a lot of leeway there. So they do say that, I mean, if we can make this happen, that things will essentially, you know, be status quo, that hopefully, you know, we won't see more extreme weather. We won't see more frequency of extreme weather. We won't see like strange weather patterns in places we didn't expect it to see. Sea levels would hopefully not rise as much. And so, I mean, that would be the ideal case scenario, right? I mean, that would be our perfect world, I mean, given where we're at. So in terms of how people would live in 2050, I mean, we'd probably have so many technological advances that maybe, I mean, we wouldn't have to worry as much about, I mean, certainly personal change is important, but if the technology, you know, catches up or even advances, I mean, what we're able to do, then who knows about our ability to kind of control the warming of the planet. But yeah, it's hard to say. Forecasting out some 30 years, that's pretty hard to think about.
Exactly. Yeah, well, thanks, Sarah, so much for being on the podcast and sharing your, you know, wealth of experience and you know, some simple, completely doable lifestyle changes that can help us, you know, at least feel like we're part of the solution and not as much part of the problem. I think the more people can empower themselves so that we don't feel completely hopeless, then there's like a synergy, right? It's okay. Well, now I've done a little bit. So now I don't feel hopeless. So now I feel like I can do more. Mm. And now I can feel like I can work with other people instead of hiding because I feel like I'm a terrible person for, you know, for my consumptive lifestyle. Yeah, I think there's some synergy involved as more people take up your suggestions and more people take up your coaching. Speaking of which, how can people find you and your services? What's the best way for them to engage with you?
Right. So they can go to my website. So that's SAZ, healthyliving.com. So that is my sustainable living and health and wellness coaching site. If you're interested in my business consulting for corporate responsibility, environmental social governance, which is ESG in our parlance, and sustainability, you can check me out at Lynz Consulting. That's LYNZ consulting.com. I'm also on Twitter and LinkedIn.
Great. As Kelly says, we'll post all those links in the show notes. Mm-hmm. So definitely reach out. You've got some great blogs, and I hope people start there and do some reading and get educated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hope it helps. So thank you so much.
Thank you for being here. What a treat.
A great conversation. Thank you.
Again, big gratitude to Sarah Zellner for sharing her passion, intelligence, and commitment around these issues. And let me give you an example of how committed Sarah is to helping people with sustainability decisions. After she recorded this interview with us, she realized that she wasn't as clear and complete as she wanted to be about the impacts of air travel and how to ameliorate or offset those impacts. So she went and did the research and wrote a blog post about it. And now we're all up to date, or you will be once you read it. There is, of course, a link to that blog in our show notes. Sarah is exactly the kind of guest that we'll be talking to all throughout the season. People who are deeply engaged in the work of creating sustainable communities, sustainable households, sustainable families. People who are exploring how we can live well together with other humans, with animals, and in a way that makes the Earth a viable place for future generations. We hope you'll come along with us on this investigation and subscribe to this podcast. We also invite you to join others in the community that's beginning to grow up around this podcast. Subscribe to the semi-weekly newsletter for behind-the-scenes stories, additional sustainability tips and life hacks, and, of course, always a gratuitous picture of the podcasts. Also, check us out on Clubhouse. We're extending the conversations with our guests and creating more opportunities for your engagement by branching out onto the Clubhouse app. Clubhouse, for those of you who don't know, is this very participatory social media app that allows us to have real-time facilitated conversations about a particular topic, often with people from all around the world. We held our first Clubhouse room just yesterday, and we were joined by more than 30 other people from all over the globe. We heard from old friends who live just down the street and made brand new connections with environmental activists in Singapore and South Africa. It was a thrill to hear their voices and all the different ways that they're addressing sustainability in their communities and beyond. You're invited to join our Clubhouse room to ask questions, share solutions, and tell us how you feel about your sustainability and climate adaptation journey. We're there every Sunday at 9 a.m. Mountain Time. If you're already on Clubhouse, just be sure to follow me, Charles Matthews, and I'll be sure to ping you into the room when it starts. If you're totally confused by this Clubhouse talk, don't worry. Check the links in the show notes for an easy introduction to the app and links to our room. Speaking of show notes, you can access fascinating information on our guests' backgrounds and take a deeper dive into related topics through the information we craft and curate there. This week, you'll find the key takeaways that Sarah talked about how to become more personally sustainable. You'll also find specific links to relevant blogs and a link to follow if you want to transition to wind energy through Arcadia Power. Full disclosure, if you sign up through our link, we get $10 off of our electric bill. If you sign up, we'll thank you and the planet will thank you. You can always find the show notes at here-together.us/pod for the current episode, or go to here-together.us/library for show notes from our full back catalog of episodes. So just reminders, join us on Clubhouse Sunday, 9 a.m. Mountain Time. Follow us on Twitter at HereTogether1. This is Charles Matthews, wishing you the curiosity to learn a lot about sustainable living and the fortitude to craft new habits. Remember, we love you. The Here Together podcast is a project of Rocket Feather Creative.